This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Good morning. It is good to be back here again, thinking about how we can serve in our communities, to our students, and so on. Thesis for this morning, that the teacher's basis for authority comes from being under his authority, and that the authority is vested in the teachers from the home, from the school board, and from the church. Going to the book of Matthew, first of all, chapter 8, starting in verse 5. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus said unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. The centurion here recognized that his authority was because of his ability to work under his authority, and he recognized that in Jesus. He saw Jesus and he said, here is a man who has power because he has placed himself in submission under the authority of his Father. And that's why this man has power over diseases. So he was recognizing the power in Jesus, that it was not just Jesus, it was his Father that was there. Now, another example of authority exemplified that way is in Exodus chapter 18. Verse 24 to 26. So Moses hearkened unto the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, of 50, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons, the hard cases they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. Now, we need to notice that the judges that Moses established and the centurion in this story had no authority in and of themselves to make decisions however they saw fit. They had to rule and judge in a way that was pleasing to those who were in authority over them. So, teachers, we are in authority under others, first of all. And we need to understand who we answer to and what we answer to them for. See, because being a teacher, that the authority that a teacher has in a classroom is not given to you by God. That authority is given to others, and they have given you a small part of that. And so when we do not work in a way that is pleasing to those who have given us authority, we are likely to lose that authority. I want you to think about the fact that there is a direct connection between your submission to your authority and your effectiveness. You want to build on those dreams and visions we talked about yesterday. You want to take these new procedures or different practices that maybe was used in your classroom before, but make sure it is still within the lines of the bounds of what your authority has set in place for you. Again, there's a direct relationship between your relationship with your authority and your students' respect for you. They are going to work together. And so again, we are exemplifying. We're not just exemplifying our master teacher, we're also going to exemplify to our students the submission, the respect that we want them to have for us as we show it to our authority. We talked about Galatians 5:15 the other day. If ye bite and devour one another, take care lest you be consumed. You bite and devour your authority and your students will consume you. It will just follow right along. It's not pleasant. So who is your authority as you teach? Well, we can look first of all that the church has authority over you as a school teacher. The church is what is going to give guidance to our beliefs. They are going to give a framework for our practices and the way we live out our Christianity. And I want to remind you that if you are not teaching in your home community and you are still a member where you came from, then both of those places have hold on you. Okay? You are still under the authority of both of them. One, because you committed yourself to be under the authority of your home church, and another, because you are coming here to serve as they want you to serve. So keep both of those in mind. You are under the authority of your school board, obviously. They're going to give directions in what sort of academics you are going to teach, how you are going to go about teaching them. They give directions to the activities that happen at school. They give directions regarding the school as a whole or your classroom as a whole. That is their job. That is their realm of influence. And finally, we have the parents that have responsibility given to them from God for the physical, social, academic, spiritual progress of this child. And they are going to hold you to that. And so as we come into this classroom, we need to be striving to keep all three of these authorities in line and satisfied with the way that we are conducting our class. All of them are looking to bring little different areas of influence and authority over us, but we need to be striving to keep all of these in line. And conflict comes then when we move out of line with their expectations. Or maybe they are not aligned together. The school board is asking for this, and you are trying to follow that as well, but the parents are over here somewhere asking for this over here. And so the conflict is not always a result of our problem as teachers, as we try to stay in line with our authorities, but when all of these do not line up, then there will be conflict, and we need to work through that. But as we deal with that conflict, it is important for you to understand what is your chain of command. Where will you take a problem? And make sure we take that problem to the next step up the chain. Don't skip it. Don't skip people that are in line above you. When we have a difficult student, we address that problem to their parents. And when we cannot reach a resolution there that is satisfactory for the working of our classroom, then we can take it to our school board, or maybe our principal first and then the school board, however it works in your situation. But when we have that problem with that child and we jump directly to the school board and we call up the chairman and we say, this child is not obeying, they are not cooperating in these areas, and we do not take that first to the parent, where we lose our credibility and we lose our authority in that situation, that parent is not likely to grant you authority over their child. They will be very critical of the way you deal with it. They will question what you do because you skipped that step as you were working with them. And you need to be confidential. And we are going to talk about this again tomorrow, but you must be confidential. That means two can keep a secret if one of them is dead. You right? You know that? That's what it means to be confidential. If you don't want people to know about this, then you need to make sure that they don't know about this. So, we are under these authorities. That gives us authority over certain areas. Where do we have authority? And like the centurion, our authority, the school board, the parents, the church, they are expecting us to exhibit authority in our classroom. If we do not exhibit that authority when we come into the classroom to maintain control, to exercise that learning is happening, we're going to lose our ability to be the authority. You may lose it by not being hired back, by being fired, or you may simply lose it in your classroom as your students laugh at you and they are totally uncooperative because you have failed to exhibit the authority that has been vested in you. So we are going to have authority over our students. In what ways? Well, when they come to school, they are under your authority. So you need to be aware of what is happening, the activities that they do, the habits that they are forming and acting out on, the language that they use, the words they choose, the books they bring to school and share around. That is within your realm of authority. And remember that as you evaluate that, and you say, well, this word is not acceptable. This habit needs to change. These books, I am not okay with coming into my classroom. You need to be able to do that. That is your realm of authority, to say that this is appropriate or not appropriate for my classroom. Remember, though, that your classroom must reflect the wishes and the culture and the practices and the beliefs of the community where you are teaching. So don't think we can come in and radically change all of those things about your community. You are coming here to support and serve this community as you do that. But again, keep in mind that as we do that, we're not allowing one particular party to make changes. Jim comes to school and he says this particular word, and you say, we are not going to use that word at school. Well, it's okay for me and it's okay for my dad, and he uses it. But is that okay for at school? And is that okay with the rest of your community and your church? And if it's not, then it's not okay at school. Maybe one parent comes to you and they say, all the other children are doing thus and thus and so. And we are not pleased that our daughter is coming home and doing thus and thus and so. In the same way there, just like we will not allow the choices of this one parent to allow this particular type of language in their home influence everyone else, if the consensus of the entire group is that we allow these things, if that parent wants to not allow, pick a topic, pick an activity, if that parent does not want to allow their child to do that, they are free to do that. But we do not need to implement one person's opinion over the entire group. And so we need to balance that within our authority. And this is where we go to the person above us and we say, what is the culture? What is the belief? What is the practice? What is okay here? If you are unsure, if you're in a new community, what is okay here? What do I tell them? So you have authority over the students. You have authority over your room. What happens in your room, especially where you are teaching? The feel, the emotion, the happiness, the peace, the calm that is in your room, that is dependent upon you. That is up to you to do that. The decor of the room, is it pleasing? Is it taken care of? That is within your realm of authority. The attitude displayed by students, whether it is respectful or disrespectful when they come into the room, that is within your realm of authority. Do they come in and flop in their desks, or do they sit up straight? Do they show respect for school? One small way I require my students to show respect for school is that when I hand back a paper assignment, you may throw that in the garbage if you do not want to take it home, but I will not allow you to rip it and shred it as you throw it away. I've just said, well, that's we are not going to do that. We are not going to disrespect the hard work that we have put into this project by doing that to it. And so that's, you know, I could go farther to say, you know, you have to take it home. You may not wrinkle it. You may not fold it. You may not make paper airplanes out of it. I want to make sure that you had signed and you bring it back so I see it tomorrow. I know that you'd, okay. You could go that far if you wanted to, I guess. But I'm just saying this is what we're going to do. We are going to respect our assignments, and we're not going to shred them and to show our disapproval and distaste for them. You have authority over the structure, the learning styles, the teaching styles, the practices, the policy that you use in your classroom. That's for you to establish, to make it yours. And finally, and probably what we need to think about here a little more, is you have authority over yourself as you work in your classroom. Okay? What you do, the way you appear, the way you act, that is within your realm of authority. You need to be self-regulating. You need to be an adult. It's difficult sometimes, I know. But we need to be adults. And we are adults relating to children. And we talked about this somewhat the other day when we talked about gentleness. And we talked about some of those things. Remember that just because there are some things that are appropriate for you that you do not need to share with your class. Some things you maybe it's something you're dealing with in your personal life. They do not need to be told some of those things. They are not prepared for some of those things, even though you relate with them every day and you want to teach and help them, you know, and learn and so on. Be careful about the things you relate to them about your experiences as an adult. Make sure it's appropriate for them at their age. How you are perceived is within your realm of authority. Now, you are going to be perceived by people that are much less mature than you are. They are children. But they are going to form perceptions of you, and you must be aware of those and be careful about those, okay? And even when they are not correct, you need to try to make sure that you are doing something to maintain that they have a proper perspective of you, a perception of you. I had parents come to visit me the first parent-teacher meeting we had, and they were displeased about my unfair treatment and bias against one particular young man in my classroom. I said, "Oh, which young man is that?" And they said, "Well, you know." "No, I'm not sure. Who was it?" Their daughter had gone home and said that Mr. Zook is doing thus and thus and so, and he is being unfair. And the perception of that child was wrong. I was not unfairly singling out that young man. He was exhibiting certain traits and characteristics and action that I was not okay with in my classroom that others were not. So guess what? He got a little more attention. I was not singling him out. But that was the perception that this child took home. And so I needed to take care to explain that and discuss that with the parents that no, that's not how this is happening here. Okay? Remember to be the teacher, to be a person that can be respected and appreciated and looked up to. But in the thing of thinking about my authority in this classroom and with these students, remember that we are not given just authority. We are given a limited scope of authority. We are not to assume authority outside of what we have been given. In the book of Numbers, chapter 16, we have an example of someone who did this. Take the first three verses of chapter 16. "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, and the son of Levi, and Dathan, the son of Abiram, the son of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, and the sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, Ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, and every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord." These men came to Moses and Aaron, and they had a following. They were leaders over these people. They had authority to speak in behalf of these people. But did they? Let's go on to verses 28 to 30. And Moses said, "Hereby ye shall know that the Lord hath sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind." I'm not working on my own authority. I'm working under the authority of God. "If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open up her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord." They came to a bad end. They assumed authority that was not given unto them. They tried to take away from the authority that God had put in Moses and Aaron. And they said, "Well, we can be just as authoritative as you are. We can assume this authority." And God said, "No, it's not going to happen. That was not given to you." So remember that. You are given authority at school within your classroom. But as you relate with these same students, as you see them at church, or if you happen to be in a youth group with some of your students, that authority does not exhibit to those places. And if you want to maintain an authoritative stance in your classroom, and if you want to be respected for having authority in your classroom and being able to get things done and have students that respect your, when you make a ruling, then you have got to stay within those bounds and not try to take that elsewhere. Or you will overstep that and you will come to a bad end. Hopefully not as bad as these men. So how do we implement this authority? What does it look like? How do we gain control of however many students you have? You go to a new school, maybe you don't know these people. How do you step into there and do this? Well, let's think about this. From the book, The Art of War, by Sun Tzu. No, I did not read the book. This is what he said. 100 victories in 100 battles is not the most skillful. Subduing the other's military without battle is the most skillful. Now, as I'm thinking about teaching school, that sounds delightful to me if we can teach school without battles. But this person had exhibited the authority and the pattern that he didn't even have to go to war. He just showed up and that was it. Okay? That's what we're trying to do. Here's another one from another book, The Elements of Teaching. A very good book on talking about lots of different ideas about attributes a teacher needs to exhibit, whether it is authority or gentleness or excitement or several of them. It's a very good book. Teachers must use discipline to impose necessary organization on the potential chaos of a classroom. And they must do so to create an atmosphere favorable for learning. So we are going to implement a process. We are going to implement a way of doing things, a discipline, so that we can avoid the chaos, so that we can achieve learning. One more quote from the Handbook for Creative Teaching. "Rules should be principles rather than specifics. Procedures are the specifics that result from rules." Rules should be principles rather than specific. Principles should be very few. Our rules should be very few. I have two of them for you. And you can run your classroom on two rules. And out of these rules, we then have the way that we live because of these rules, because of these procedures. Here we go. Number one. School is a place where we honor and reverence God. That's our first one. That's our rule. That's our principle. Number two, school is a place focused on academic learning. Those two things. So what does our number one rule tell us? What do we develop from that? Well, honor and reverence for God produces all sorts of other actions in you and in your students. The two greatest commandments that we have heard about so far this week already come out of here. We have honor and respect for authority. So that's the church, the school, the home, the teacher. It's going to determine appropriate attitudes. It's going to involve love for others. So we're going to have kindness and patience and preferring others and all these appropriate actions for other people out of this idea of wanting to serve God and honor and reverence Him. The second one, taking school and making it a place where we focus on academic learning, is also going to give us a lot of things about the way we're going to behave and the things we're going to do because we want to achieve learning, academic learning. Need to keep that word in there. So we're going to need promptness, and we're going to need neatness in the way we do things, and we're going to need to study, and we're going to need order, and we're going to need quietness, and we're going to need respect for the tools that we're using, our books and the property and our assignments, because all of those things are going to relate to us getting this done. It's also going to affect our cooperation together and our teamwork and all of those things. So these principles or rules then give us a basis for all the other procedures that we're going to put in place that we need to have for functioning in school. These procedures then just exemplify or give us a little way of living out this principle. Okay? We can avoid making all sorts of petty rules by focusing on these two. Because in reality, a rule does not teach. Okay, a rule does not teach anything. But a principle or a belief requires me to think and evaluate, is this appropriate? Does this meet the requirements that I need to have to achieve learning? Rules restrict. Don't do this, do this. Don't do this, do this. Rules need policemen. And being a policeman at school is not fun. Okay? So I want to avoid a rule. Because if I make a rule, then I have to enforce a rule. So I don't want to make a rule. I want to implement a principle to guide me to an end. I want to honor and reverence God. So how am I going to do that? A principle needs a believer, a follower. Now, a couple things. You need to be invested in the mission and the purpose of your school and not have your own that's separate from that. And when we set procedures for our classroom, we need to make a connection with these procedures, with these principles, okay? That we can connect this. I am doing these things because I want this to be a place of learning. Your students may not always see that. Some of them may be too young to understand that we're here to develop these two principles. And they're like, these are just rules to them, okay? But you need to understand that you have a reason for this. Some of your students may be older and they just refuse to understand why we're doing this and they want to call it a rule, okay? Sometimes we just have rules. But for the most part, we want to avoid having them. And we want to work off of these things here. So when we make procedures, we need to, younger classes need more, rowdy classes need more than calm classes, and so on. Some of these procedures and these ideas, we don't even need to make a rule about them. So let's say, first day of school, you're listing all the things we need to do and not do. Don't throw rocks at cars is probably not one we need to mention, okay? Do we really need to say that, or do we know that this is not appropriate because it does not fall in line with these things here? If this comes up and someone's throwing rocks at cars, we can say, this is not appropriate. Now, we don't need to make a big rule about it, but we can say, this is not appropriate. Why? Well, it's not kind. It's not respectful. It's damaging other people's property. All these things here are principles why we don't do this. Okay? And we can teach a principle rather than just saying, we don't do this. So we have procedures for our students, how they come and how they go and how they sit and how they behave socially. How they do their schoolwork, when the assignments are done, how they are done, how the classroom is cleaned, how it is not cleaned, how the noise level is, what is the order? Because all of these are going to affect our authority and the way we implement procedures. And when a procedure is disrupted, it's not so much that the rule has been broken, but that our pathway to accomplish this principle has been interrupted. So let's just go back and do it right. Let's rewalk that. Let's rewrite this. Let's redo this. And we're going to do it right, because then that gets us to accomplish what was our principle. What were we trying to accomplish? And we are trying to establish a flywheel of habit, something that just goes and goes and keeps itself going, and we don't even have to think about it. This last year, I was given a compliment on how well my grammar class functioned and the procedures and the styles I had in my grammar class. And they said, "How did you get them to do all that?" And I went, I do. Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Let's see, what do I do? How did I do that? And I kind of, all the things that they were doing, the grading, the passing in papers, the handing in notebooks, the walking around that was all appropriate that they needed to do, all of them had been set in place as procedures, but they and I had both forgotten all of those things that we had talked about and said, this is how we do it. And we were just doing them. They had become habitual. And I didn't even have to sit there and say, okay, we're doing this, we're doing this. They knew it, and it worked. Okay? It was exciting to actually think about that being that way, that it had come to that point there with us. You can accomplish anything with students if you set high expectations for behavior and performance. And then we follow that with, which you also abide by yourself. What are the procedures that you have in place for your life? In yourself. So let's think about dealing with problems authoritatively. I want you to think of two different occupations. I want you to think of cowboys, and I want you to think of shepherds. What is a basic difference between cowboy and shepherds besides cool hats and boots? Okay? What is the difference between cowboys and shepherds? Right. Cowboys drive the animals before them and shepherds lead them. It has to do with the animals they're working with. Sometimes we drive our students too because they do not want to follow. But in general, as teachers, we are shepherds and we guide them. So when we come to a problem, let's think of a verse in Galatians. Chapter 6, verse 1, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourselves, lest ye also be tempted." Notice that when there was a problem, the purpose of dealing with it was not to punish, but to restore. Now, as teachers, we are dealing with these students that are not our children. Okay? So this is somewhat different in we're relating to these. We do not deal with problems the same way parents deal with problems. We are teachers. And so I like to think of our correction as being only for the, and parents also need to think of correction for the purpose of restoration, but our methods and so on are somewhat different. But our purpose of correction is not just to punish for the wrong, but to correct and make it a right action. We're trying to make believers and followers in these principles that we set forth, not just in following the procedure. Correction given for restoration and not punishment provides discipline, a training force to achieve a desired behavior or action. That's what discipline is. It is forcing it to abide by this way here so we get a desired result. Remember that as we are working here, we are working under our authority. Think back to Moses. He set these judges in place. And when there was a problem here and we cannot solve it here, we're going to work it up the chain. And if they can't solve it, the hard problem ended up before Moses. So remember that your hard problem does not end up before you. You pass it on up. Just let go on up. That does not in any way imply a weakness in your authority or an inability to deal with that problem. Okay? Acknowledging our authority to help us come deal with a problem that we are struggling with is there to emphasize our authority. They come in and they say, I am here. I am the principal, the board chairman, whatever it is that comes into there and to come in to help you with this problem. And they're saying, we support this person. This person represents us. When a parent talks to the child and says, I agree with your teacher in this matter. Your teacher is correct. You need to abide by the wishes of your teacher. That is emphasizing your authority in this situation. So do not be an island. Too often we are working alone in our classrooms, and we are the only authority there. Don't let it be that way. Talk to other teachers in your school about this. Okay? Don't be all alone. One of the most difficult years I had in teaching, I was really struggling to maintain authority and to work with my group, my students as a cohesive group together. And I asked the principal to come down, and he came down to visit our class and talked with them about these are the problems we're having, and this is the way we need to do. And he was there to support and to hold up the authority that I needed to have in that classroom. Teachers are the determining force of authority in the classroom. They're that driving force that holds that classroom together. And if we look at the classroom as a whole and we say this classroom as a whole is, they're lagging behind, they're unmotivated, they're divisive, they are disrespectful, our first course has to be to look at the authority of that teacher. Is that teacher being authoritative? And in the same way, if the students are motivated and they're happy in their cohesive group and as a whole they are learning and working together, we could again look back and say, there's the authority of that teacher showing itself there. I have been both of those places. When I had the principal come down and speak to my class because of the problems I was having, I was part of the problem there. And we need to be able to acknowledge that. I was trying to get things to happen and to work through things in a way that did not work. My desire to get it there was right, but the way I was going about it was wrong, and it was undermining my authority. And it made my year very difficult, but it was my problem. They were a difficult class. There were some difficult students there, and they had been difficult for other teachers, but I did not help the situation. So thinking of being under authority, where do you look to gain your authority? It is not from yourself because you are an authoritative personality. It's not because you're good with children. It's because you are fulfilling the responsibility that you have been given in working under your authority. In becoming like your teacher, your master. So I want you to think just a minute about your relationships with your authority. Are you on board? Are you on the same place? Are you submitted with your home, if you still live at home? Or with your spouse, if you are married? Because the level of working together and submission with that relationship will affect your classroom, because that has authority on you, and you are under that authority. What about your church? Are you working in compliance underneath the authority in your church? Do you have respect for them? Are you working to build up the brotherhood? Are you on board with the plans that your school has, with your school board has, for your classroom and for your school? Are you in disagreement with the procedures that they want you to have? Does their mission statement bother you? Or are you on board and working to come under that authority? Because you are not going to have a lasting authority, order, discipline in your classroom until you are working and serving to please your authority.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.